From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, this is a special edition of Connections, broadcasting live from our WXXI television studios. We're downstairs with a studio audience this afternoon and ready to spend both hours of today's show on a subject that is challenging our community and our country. We're talking about addiction. Primarily, we'll discuss the opioid epidemic this afternoon, but we're also focusing on what recovery truly means. In our second hour, we'll welcome Monroe County Sheriff Todd Baxter, Monroe County Health Commissioner Dr. Michael Mendoza, and Jennifer Farringer, Director of DePaul's National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence in the Rochester area. But first, stories of recovery, the kinds of stories that might seem impossible for families who are in the first hours or days of confronting addiction. And this hour, we're discussing why recovery is not necessarily a straight line. Relapse is part of recovery, does not mean the end of the story. Our connection for this hour, first made, we'll go back to September 26, 2017. A local judge decided to send a man to the Monroe County Jail. His name was Brandon Scott, and on that day, he felt beaten down by his addiction. He would later say that he thought the only way out of his addiction was to die. 1 year later, the before and after photos are shocking. Brandon had looked gaunt, perhaps like a dying man, older than his years. Well, today he's not just physically fit, he is ripped. He's healthy. He's living in recovery. His story is part of our discussion on what recovery means. And my guests this hour include the remarkable Brandon Scott. It is great to have you. Thanks for being here. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I'm doing great.
Well, it's great to have you and Yana Kashper and Sean Smith. You know them from Rockcovery Fitness. Yana, co-founder of Rockcovery Fitness, also living in recovery. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
And Sean, welcome to you as well. Nice to have you.
Thanks, Evan.
I want to mention that this broadcast is part of special programming in a series called New York's Opioid Crisis, which is airing on public broadcasting stations across the state next week. It's a first-of-its-kind partnership to draw attention to this public health crisis and raise awareness of services available in local communities for those impacted by opioid addiction. You can hear coverage throughout next week on WXXI-TV and WXXI Radio. Now, if you'd like to join today's conversation on social media, you can tweet to us. I'm at Evan Dawson. Producer Megan Mack is MMAC Media. We're using the hashtags Addiction Crisis PBS and Opioid Crisis NY. And you can also watch the video of this broadcast on Facebook Live right now. Just go to the WXXI News page. You can also watch it on our website, WXXINews.org. So if you're watching, great to have you along with us. I mentioned Brandon off the top, and I think it was Yano who was telling me about Brandon's story. I guess the recovery community, well, you guys are so supportive of one another, and I find that that's really inspiring. You grabbed onto Brandon's story. Why did you tell me that this was the guy I had to bring on today's program, Yana?
I've had the privilege of seeing Brandon grow and in his recovery and just achieve things that I don't think he ever thought were possible. You know, it's so easy to see in someone else what they can't see in themselves. And I know he had just celebrated a year of recovery, and he posted these pictures of before and after. And I just thought, he's a true example of that recovery is possible.
That's amazing. The pictures that we're talking about, they have shared with us, and we are sharing on our WXXI platforms, on Twitter especially. So if you want to take a look, how do you feel when you look at the pictures of yourself?
It's just shocking to me as well, especially those before pictures. Like, a lot of people tell me that they don't even think that that's the same person. Like, it looks nothing like me. And, like, I remember what I felt like in those before pictures, and that's when it was hopeless, and I really thought that there was no way out except for death. And to see the after pictures of where I am now, and I just, it happened so quickly, like in the blink of an eye too. So it just feels great.
Well, I want to tell you, you and I are Facebook friends now, so I did a little Facebook stalking of you, and I went back, and throughout 2017, you know, you had done some posting, and then sometime around July, that was it. You were off the grid. Clearly, there were health and the crisis was hitting you. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing I know, you're posting in December, and you're already starting to look like the Brandon I see today. When you made the decision, you hit it hard. You know, you decided recovery was going to be the next move.
If it was December, that was when I had gotten out of Monroe County Jail and they sent me to an inpatient detox center. And then as soon as I got out and I was, you know, I had a little bit of freedom is when I found Rockcovery Fitness. And they've been an integral part of my recovery.
We're going to get there in a second. Let's back it up a little. You're from where originally?
I grew up in Gates.
You grew up in Gates. Mm-hmm. And when's the first time you found yourself trying any substances?
First substance I ever ingested was alcohol, and that wasn't until I was 18 years old. I was already done with high school. So those issues started a bit later in my life than most people's.
And why, for you, did it become addiction? Why do you, when you look back at your own personal history, why do you think you ended up in addiction?
Honestly, I felt like I never fit in growing up. Like, I really never had any friends growing up. I was pretty sheltered by my parents. And so when it got to that point in my life when I first tried alcohol, I also had all this new freedom because I was 18 years old and my family, you know, eased up a lot as far as restrictions go. So I was able to do whatever I wanted to do at that point. And I didn't really see the world for what it was yet. So I fell in with the wrong group of people, and they started to drink after high school, and that's how the beginning of my addiction issues started.
Did you drink hard right away?
We partied on the weekends, you know, we drank, and then in the weekdays we went back to our normal lives, but that only lasts for so long.
Was there a time soon thereafter that you thought you were out of control, or did you always think you had control of it?
It got out of control pretty quick, and I was well aware of that when I started college the next semester, and I realized that school, work, and addiction issues don't really mesh very well, and I wanted to actually start to drink full time, so I dropped out of college.
You dropped out of college to drink?
Mm-hmm.
Did you have people in your life telling you this is a problem?
Nobody in my life at this point really knew the extent of which I was doing it. I was hiding it pretty well at this point.
Were you drinking sort of privately, so either in cars and other places where people weren't seeing it?
No, at this point, I'm going out with my friends mm-hmm. like every night of the week and partying with them, so it's definitely not private. It's more of a public thing, but it was every day at this point.
Okay, but what happened last year that put you in the Monroe County Jail wasn't necessarily related to alcohol, right? So when did you end up doing, because I think your story takes you to heroin.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get there?
Well, it started with the drinking because mm-hmm. I was driving a vehicle and I was so drunk that I was being really stupid and I decided to see how fast my car can go. Long story short, I hit a tree going 95 miles an hour. I woke up in the hospital and handcuffed to the bed, but after I got released, they gave me a prescription for opiate painkillers. And addiction didn't take over right then. It's very gradual at this point because I started taking those pills, and then I realized that, you know, you take more of them and you start to feel a little better. So I started to take more and more, and then they have less of an effect the more you take. So I had to keep getting stronger substances, and eventually led me to heroin when I actually went to a detox center at this point, and everybody in the detox center told me I needed to try heroin if I was doing all these pills. So by the time I left detox,
Everyone was telling you that, you mean other patients?
Patients in the detox center,
so
yes.
So patients were telling you, you need heroin.
Mm-hmm.
And you went out and found it.
When I left the detox center, I had every intent of staying clean until I crossed the threshold of those doors. And the first thought through my mind was, I need to try this if all the patients are recommending it. Wow. And that's just the way my mind thought at that point.
Wow. When was that, by the way? What year was that?
I can't. That was probably 8 or 9 years ago.
Okay.
I'd say.
All right. And so it's been a while then.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you find in terms of your own either ability to handle heroin or your desire for it? Did you use regularly from that point on?
From the first time I used heroin, it was a regular thing. Yes.
Yeah.
And it steals your soul. Honestly, it gets to a point where it becomes automatic and it takes over all of the priorities in my life because. When you don't have it, you get so sick, and the physical withdrawals from heroin are so intense that I'd be willing to do anything to make that go away. And so right then and there, all my morals go out the window, and heroin becomes the only thing I'm thinking about.
Did you have moments over the ensuing 8 or 9 years where you really did want to get yourself freed of it?
Almost every night I would tell myself, this is enough. I'm gonna die if I keep on this way. But then every single morning, as soon as I would open my eyes and I would feel that pain from the withdrawal set in, my mind would just go straight back to how am I gonna get my next fix.
All right, so you end up last year in a situation where Brandon and I were talking before the program began, because the before and after picture that maybe you're looking at on our various social media feeds, Brandon really looks like a different person. And But it was early in last year that you had a moment where you thought, you know, you need to tell your family you may not, you may be gone soon. What was going on early in 2017?
Are you referring to when I was in the hospital?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. I was admitted to Strong Hospital. I don't remember how I... Well, the last thing I remember was being taken out of the apartment I was in on a stretcher. And then I woke up in the ICU about a week later. I was told that I had been in a coma the whole time. I had a blood infection which traveled to all over my body. It gave me an infection in my heart and in my brain. And I spent a total of 77 days in the hospital, and I came so close to dying that when I was first admitted, they told my mother to prepare herself for the fact that I'm probably not going to make it back out of the hospital.
Did you have conversations with your mother? Did she fully understand what was going on then?
I believe she did. I don't know. Like, there's been certain times where I think that I hid it well enough from her, but then there's other times I think she had to have known.
Can I ask, how do you view your relationship with your family?
Today, I mean, my relationship with my mother is very good today.
Good.
I try to leave most of my family alone for the most part, considering I've been, you know, a thorn in their side for so long now. I try to give them space at this point. But I can always reach out and talk to them, and they're very proud of me today. So.
Wow, that's tremendous self-awareness. But the work that you're doing, we're going to talk in a minute about dealing hope and some of the work that you're doing as part of recovery. So I imagine they are very proud of you because you go throughout last year. Your family's warned that they may need to be prepared for the fact that you're going to be gone. You survived that 77-day stay, but you end up back in front of a judge on September 26th, and he puts you in jail, and you have written that that was the best thing that happened for you. So take me through that.
Well, I was part of drug court, and I only took drug court because I wanted the freedom to be able to continue to use, but I didn't realize it would end me up in jail pretty quick. So I get sent to Monroe County Jail on September 26th, and at this point, my state of mind is telling me just to comply with whatever they need me to do, whatever they want me to do, so I can get back out of jail, so I can continue using, because at this point, I think it's the only option in my life. And so I'm in Monroe County Jail for about 5 weeks, and, you know, I had to detox in jail, and detoxing in jail is probably the worst possible way to detox.
Why do you say that?
Because it's cold turkey. They don't give you anything. I mean, in a detox center or an inpatient, they'll give you, you know, certain substances to help you come down easier. Not in jail. They make you sweat it out.
Wow.
And that was the only time I've ever had to detox like that through the whole thing.
In a weird way, I'm kind of curious to know if that worked for you or if that...
I believe it did.
You did.
Yeah. I mean, going through that amount of pain, like every time I get a thought or a craving about using drugs again, I just think back to what I went through in that jail cell. It was not fun.
But eventually you're coming out of jail.
Mm-hmm.
And why do you think it was different this time? Because of the cold turkey? Did that prepare you in some kind of way?
Yeah, it did. Like I said, just remembering the pain. And then they sent me directly to an inpatient after I got out of jail. So I still wasn't able to hit the streets yet. And that was probably the best thing for me, because at that point I would have went back to using if I was free to do so. When I got to the inpatient, though, was when I actually started to work towards my recovery, when I started to see other people that were happy in sobriety, and I decided that was something I wanted.
Boy, that sounds, at least from my observation of your story, it sounds like that's really key, because in a previous episode, you're hearing other patients telling you got to get on heroin. And now this time around, you're seeing people who are in recovery and they're happy to be in recovery.
Yes.
And to you, was that like the first light that says, wait, that could be me. I could do that.
Yeah, well, that was something that was absurd to me at a certain point. Like, I never believed that you could actually be sober and be happy. Like, those two words didn't belong in the same sentence, as far as I thought for a long time. But the more I talked to these people that brought certain meetings into the facility, I could tell that they were actually genuine, and they really were sober, and they really were happy. And I began to envy them, and I stopped thinking I knew everything, and I started to realize I knew nothing, so I was open to being guided.
Wow. What did you need to learn most?
How to stay occupied and not want to use drugs and alcohol because as long as I can remember, I've always needed, you know, social lubricants to have fun. So activities with sober people and sober environments was definitely a very big key in my recovery.
How did you find these guys? How did you find Rockcovery?
Rockcovery Fitness came into the facility. I was in an inpatient, and I actually didn't get to attend the meeting. I think I was asleep, and nobody woke me up. But all the patients were coming back from the meeting, and they were talking about it like for hours. And I was like, I got to check this place out when I leave. And that's exactly what I did.
Now, were you somebody growing up? Did you work out much growing up?
No. I was the exact opposite, actually. I was a bookworm. I was a computer guy. I majored in IT. Like, it's complete 180.
I mean, because meeting you now, people who meet you probably assume you played cornerback on the football team, you ran track, you know,
no.
You lifted. So that was new to you.
Yes.
And I'm wondering how much you weighed in those before and how much you weigh now?
About 175.
Like no body fat.
Right. Well, I'm sure there's some.
175, and you probably in September 26, 2017, you probably weighed a lot less. Do you know what you weighed?
I believe it was around 115.
115 yes. pounds.
And so I'm 5 feet in. 5 feet, 8 inches, so.
5'8", 115.
Yep.
60 pounds different, a totally different look to you. What do people who grew up with you, when they haven't seen you in years, when they bump into you now, what do they say?
Oh, I actually haven't run into many people that I grew up with.
Oh, you got to have to do that.
Everybody that's in my life today, I've actually met in the program.
You got right into Rockcovery, and was it hard? I mean, having not lifted weights and kind of been in that,
No, it was actually incredibly easy. The first time I ever walked through the doors of Rockcovery Fitness, everybody there greeted me like I was already like part of the family, like I was accepted. And that was completely new to me because they didn't know me from a complete stranger. So,
Yana and Sean, can you guys kind of weigh in on that? Just because I imagine that's exactly the kind of community you wanted to create.
Yeah, I think that's just it. We felt out of place for so long. We felt like Brandon, I could echo what he said about not thinking we could belong or have fun anywhere, and then being able to come to a place where you're like welcomed with open arms, I think is what we needed in our recovery, and that's how we wanted to have Rockcovery be.
Sean, how many people who come through the door do you feel like you know them?
I make it a point to learn every member's name. And Rockcovery isn't just a facility, it's a family. And anyone that walks through the doors says what Brandon says. It's just a warm feeling. The dogs greet you at the door, and somebody greets you with a handshake or a hug. And we do remember each other's names, and we remember each other's stories. And we're just there to support one another. And it really does just have that warm feel to it.
Rockcovery was created, I mean, as a community, it's been around for about 4 years, but the actual facility you have is where, by the way?
On Dewey Avenue, 1035 Dewey Avenue, right by Aquinas.
Okay, and you opened in the middle of last year, so it's been just about a year and a half now.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have guessed if it was a lot longer, but it already feels so established in the community, and you've got, a couple of hundred regulars that you see pretty often?
We serve an average of 200 unique individuals each month, so it's about 1,000 people a year, and it doesn't include like our 5K, which was 600 people this year, so quite a bit.
Yeah, and you're accepting new members?
Always.
Always accepting new members at Rockcovery Fitness. So if you're just joining us this hour, we are, if it sounds a little different, we are broadcasting at WXXI, but downstairs, not in the radio studio, but in our television studio, both hours devoted to the opioid crisis today. And the first hour of the program is a conversation about recovery. Now, Brandon Scott's been in recovery for just over a year. Now, just marked a year. What did that mean to you to mark 1 year?
At first, I didn't feel like it was that big of a deal because this is not my first attempt at trying to get clean.
Okay.
I've actually had more clean time before, but when I put up my pictures, my before and after pictures, and the responses I got from people, the messages I got from people that have friends or loved ones in a similar position telling me that my story gives them hope for the people that they know that are struggling, that gave me a feeling that I can't describe. I've never felt before. So
it's awesome. Again, the pictures we've posted on our social media platforms, Brandon's before and after pictures, when he was down to 115 pounds and family thought he might be dead soon. And now here he is, 175 pounds, working out and spreading hope, and you're dealing hope. What does it mean to be dealing hope? Because I see on your social media pages, you talk about dealing hope.
Dealing hope, yes. I volunteer with an organization called Be the Change Hope Dealers. And what we do is every Sunday morning, we go out to the most high traffic drug areas in the city, mostly off of North Clinton. And there's basically used needles and syringes lying everywhere. Mm-hmm. And we clean those up. And while we're out there, we hand out lunches to the addicts that are out there because they don't eat. I know I didn't eat when I was in active addiction. And we just try to engage the community, show our presence. We'll talk to addicts that are out there, and if they express a desire to get into treatment, then we'll do our best to try to get them a bed somewhere.
And so you're out there how often now with that?
Every Sunday.
Every Sunday mm-hmm. with that. Does that give you more of a sense as well of sort of belonging and purpose?
It does. It also keeps me very humble to see, you know, people that are still in active addiction because it's a constant reminder of where I was not too long ago because I was, you know, right out there with them. And it reminds me where I'll be if I ever go back out again because I'd just be one use away from being right there next to them at those abandoned houses. You know, this keeps me humble and keeps me sober.
Everybody's story is different, and in our second half hour, we're going to talk about how relapse is part of recovery. And that's an important part of the story to tell, I think, particularly for people who are going to face that road, you know, and having not been there themselves. For you, Brandon, how often are you thinking about using? Do you feel urges at all? How do you feel about that?
I do still feel urges. Mm-hmm. They're few and far between at this point because I'm constantly working on my sobriety and doing all these positive things. But in the beginning, they were definitely a lot more prevalent. I mean, every day I used to think about using. Now I still have thoughts maybe once or twice a week that I get strong urges that I still want to use. But I know enough now to slow down my thinking. And they say play the tape out. Think about how it's going to end if I ever were to go back out again. And the results from that are not something I would be okay with.
Play the tape. I haven't heard that phrase, but it makes sense. So you actively think ahead. Mm-hmm. If I do this, I know where my life is going.
Correct, because at this point, to use again, I have to make a conscious decision to go back out and use again.
Hmm. Brandon Scott's amazing story in living in recovery is just one of the stories we're hearing this hour. Let's get our only break of the hour, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Yana and Sean about their experiences. And we'll talk to them as well about what it means to have a recovery community at Rockcovery Fitness, that there are remarkable success stories and there are some very hard, painful stories, undeniably. That's part of what we're seeing in our community and across the country. So this broadcast is part of special programming in a series called New York's Opioid Crisis, both hours, live here on Connections here on the Opioid Crisis. Let's get that break and we're right back. Coming up in our second hour, we continue with this special edition of Connections, broadcasting live from our WXXI television studios with a live audience as we talk about the opioid crisis. Next hour, we welcome Monroe County Sheriff Todd Baxter, Dr. Michael Mendoza, the Monroe County Commissioner of Public Health, and Jennifer Farringer from DePaul. They're talking about what various communities, law enforcement, the medical community, and more are doing about opioids. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. If you want to interact with the program today, there's lots of ways to do that. And we can do that via email, connections@wxxi.org. As I mentioned, I'm on Twitter at Evan Dawson, producer Megan Mack on Twitter at MMackMedia. And you can call the program. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I should mention that because we're devoting both hours to the opioid crisis, if you've got specific questions or either comments or stories to share, you've got plenty of time to do that over the next 90 minutes or so. So one of those just rare days on Connections where both hours devoted to the same topic. And the panel in the first hour is talking about recovery. Before we talk to Yana and Sean about their stories, I want to read for all three of our guests on stage here from a piece that was written for Slate Magazine Online by Zachary Siegel, and I'm curious to know what you think about it. The title is, I'm So Sick of Opioid Disaster Porn, and I want to read from the piece. Quote, I know that the photo essays showing the stark hell of addiction are trying to help, but they miss a huge part of the story, recovery. These glossy, often black and white images document a reductive slice of what the opioid crisis really is, Yes, there are funerals and overdoses, but they are not the whole story. By zooming in on only the most severe cases, shooting people at their lowest lows, and neglecting to capture even the possibility of recovery, these photo essays miss a whole side of the story. In the end, the portrait painted is so stark and dire that not only does it not reflect the current reality, it feels like a representation that could end up being harmful for people living with addiction who want to get better, but feel helpless and hopeless. And people who have overcome their addictions are an important part of the crisis. Dr. Nora Volko, who's the director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse, best explained why in her recent piece for Scientific American. She wrote, quote, "Viewing addiction as a treatable medical problem from which people can and do recover is crucial for enabling a public health-focused response that ensures access to effective treatments and lessens the stigma surrounding a condition that afflicts nearly 10% of Americans at some point in their lives," end quote. Sean, how do you feel about that? Do you think that too much of the media focus via either social media or news media is focused on what Siegel and Slate says is opioid disaster porn as opposed to the recovery side?
I do. By negating the recovery piece, you're showing people that there really isn't hope. And the truth is there's a whole different way of life for us and these people who are out there still struggling.
All right, Yano, how do you feel about that?
I wholeheartedly agree. I knew the article when you read the heading.
Yeah.
I've read it. I've shared it. I think it's focusing on the problem is going to make the problem worse when you focus on the solution. And the solution, I do believe, is recovery. The recovery gets stronger. I think somewhere in the article it talks about, you know, when you look at cancer, does the media show a sick, dying cancer patient, and is that the message of hope? Or is the message of hope a person that overcomes and is in remission from cancer?
Okay, Brandon?
Yeah, I mean, I see that the media does cover the problem a lot more than the solution, like Anna was saying. But that's one of the biggest things that I think all of us try to do is focus more on the solution than the problem. A lot of the speakers that I hear try to ease up on the war stories and how they were before and focus more on the after part and the recovery just for this reason.
Yeah, I take the point. I mean, I think if we were to just share Brandon's photos, the before photos, which are really gripping and hard to look at, really, and not share the stories now, your fitness, your recovery, your health, that would be a problem. At the same time, I think there has to be a balance. And I think the recovery community is part of the balance. The hope that comes from knowing that recovery is going to be difficult, but you can do this is important. And it's also not a perfect straight line. And I will share that I was at the Rockcovery Fitness 5K a few weeks back up near Lake Ontario. As you mentioned, 500-600 people came out. It was great. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Sean, one of the reasons I reached out and called these guys was Sean is telling the story about recovery, and you shared a very hard story about relapse. And I don't want to take the words out of your mouth, but I think part of what you were saying was relapse is part of recovery, and don't let people, you know, tell you otherwise. And I was hoping you could share that story with our audience today.
Sure. I've been in recovery since 2010. And it's been a bumpy and rocky road. And I have bounced back from several relapses. Right now, I'm coming up on 6 months. You know, when me and Yana founded Rockcovery almost 4 years ago, I didn't suspect that I'd ever relapse again. And for it to happen again, when I did trip up and did relapse, it was just as painful as all the other times that I had. I felt that shame, that remorse, that guilt, and I didn't want to face the world. I was drinking alone in a hotel room, essentially wishing for death. It had gotten to that point, and it got to that point in a span of 4 days. It was just me alone in a hotel room in a bottle of vodka, and, you know, if I didn't know recovery was possible, you know, if I hadn't been there already, I think I'd be dead. You know, like you said, you know, you see this bleak picture painted out there of what the disease of addiction looks like. You drive down the expressway and you see the faces of meth, you know, these big billboards with people's faces destroyed by drug addiction. Hadn't I known that recovery was possible and that I had a group of people that I could reach out to, I wouldn't be here, plain and simple.
Can you take us through what you decided to do, who you reached out to, and what the response to your relapse was?
It was more of them reaching out to me, really. They knew that I was in a bad space. And I started receiving multiple phone calls and texts saying, hey, you can do this. Let me come and get you. Let me come and talk to you. And it was the people that really cared for me that rallied around me. It was this group of people that I had known either for years or that I had met at Rockovery that kind of just rallied around me and put me back on my feet and actually walked me into detox, drove me down to detox in Bath, New York at the VA facility there.
Did you feel in some sense that the shoe was on the other foot because you've been playing that role for others for a number of years now through Rockovery?
A big part of my recovery is service work, and, you know, it provides me with that sense of purpose. And yeah, I think everybody that's in recovery has that need to give back, you know, because we've been there. And when you see somebody in so much pain, it's just natural to want to help them. And I'm just fortunate enough that I have a crew of people that want to do that for me.
What message are you feeling like has to be shared regarding relapse? Because, you know, Brandon's story, and I think it's important to kind of mention again, Brandon's story, he recently hit a year, and initially he didn't think much of it because he's actually had longer periods that he's been clean. And so he understands that relapse is part of it. But I think for people who are going to be entering this for the first time, there may be a concern that relapse is failure or relapse is the end. Relapse takes you, you know, into a totally different space.
I think each time that I relapsed, I did feel that initial failure. In time, you know, I was able to build the strength and realize that I have the resilience to bounce back. I have the strength within me to bounce back, and I have the support to help me and guide me along the way. And just as long as I show the humility and am willing to take some suggestions from the people that love me, I'll make it to the place where I'm supposed to be. So anyone that does fall flat on their face again and does relapse, don't look at, you know, a failure. Don't look at relapse as a failure. Mm-hmm. You know, I heard a speaker say something that really stuck with me after this last relapse, and it was fail forward. You know, don't fail backwards. You know, when you do fall down, get up, keep moving forward. Find the people who have supported you in the past and are going to support you in the future and walk that road with you. If you did it before, you can do it again. And, you know, I think there's this big push for people in recovery to remain abstinent. And I think that's awesome. I think it's essential. But relapse does happen. And when it does happen, I don't view it as a failure necessarily. You know, it's a learning opportunity for me. You know, I'm just not done yet. I have more to learn. So hopefully I've learned everything that I've needed to learn from this last relapse. And I'm going to continue to do what I've always done. And that's rely on the people around me and listen to them.
At Rockovery, you've gotten to know, you and Jana especially, have gotten to know so many names and faces. And there's a lot of great success stories, and you guys are sort of the pillar of some of those success stories. I know you're not going to take all the credit for it, but I hear all the time from the recovery community how much credit they give to you for that. Have you also had moments of loss? Have you had moments where you have to get the news that there's either been a relapse or worse?
Yeah, several times. And there was a period where it seemed like every month we're getting the news, or once a week at times, that we're getting the news that another person had passed. And, you know, I lost my best friend in March of 2017 when I was down in Georgia training for the Best Ranger competition. And I got the news, and I immediately flew back to be a part of his funeral. And that probably, out of all the losses, that one hit me the hardest. One, because Pat was one of our founding members at Rockovery. Two, it's, you know, I just always envisioned a future with him. And that's the way it is with everyone that walks through our doors. I don't see them, you know, and think, oh, this person's going to pass away. You know, I always envision a future with them. So each loss really is hard. But when you see the people that are living in recovery, it makes the mission worth it. And when you see the family members, the families of loss, it also makes our mission all the more worthwhile to memorialize those that were lost and live in their honor.
You're hearing Sean Smith, co-founder of Rockcovery Fitness, living in recovery himself, and Yana Kashper, also co-founder of Rockcovery Fitness. And Yana, on the program in the past, you've talked a little bit about this, but I think it's we've talked a little bit about purpose and mission and looking for positive, healthy activities that will sort of drive you. And you write on your own website, you tell the story of what, when you entered recovery, you experienced a sense of loss, a lack of purpose, and pain. And I think that may run counter to what people expect, because they might think, well, you're entering recovery. Why are you then feeling a sense of loss? Take me through what your experience was and how it kind of led you to recovery.
My experience when I first entered recovery was that that of shame and guilt, and that I was a complete failure, that I've ruined my family's lives, that I've ruined my life, that I would never amount to be anything to anyone ever again. And as I... It was almost like being labeled damaged goods, and that's the best way I could put it, is when I first got clean and sober, and just thought my life was over. I just had to exist to stop, for long enough to stop hurting people, you know, and that's so not true. It was raw, and it was real, and I didn't know how to cope with day-to-day feelings or experiences or stressors or happy moments without a substance. So it was really kind of like growing up all over again, trying to figure out how to adapt, how to cope, how to be among people that aren't in active addiction.
How did you end up deciding Rockcovery is something that we've got to do here?
So it started 4 years ago. I, like Brandon, I had never worked out really almost a day of my life. I didn't go outside. I didn't ride bikes. I didn't do anything like that before I got into recovery. But Sean showed me this whole other world of fitness, of exercise, of connection. And
Sean's the only guy on the stage who grew up actually working out. Like the three most shredded worker, you know, people in this in this town. Okay, go ahead. This is a great story.
And it was 2015, and we were headed towards relapse again. You know, we've both been there before. We knew what it felt like. We knew what it looked like. We just didn't want to go there again. We decided to bring it back to basics, really, which was go on a hike. It's like negative 15, 5 feet of snow, really unpleasant. People ended up, we posted on our Facebook page, like, we're hiking here, open invite. And it was really surprising because the people that came weren't our, you know, necessarily our best friends. They were acquaintances. It was just a really random group of people that saw a post on Facebook, felt a little cabin fever, and came out on that hike. And we had such a great time. And that was really how Rockcovery started. That was the beginning of what we now know to be Rockcovery Fitness, but it wasn't this, like, altruistic, you know, we didn't set out to start an organization or a nonprofit. It was just, it was desperation on some levels and wanting to have fun.
And did you have a moment where you kind of felt comfortable enough to say, I feel like I've turned a corner? Do you ever feel like that? I mean, is it an ongoing process? What's the mindset you have in recovery?
I think turn the corner, I don't know how to answer that. That's an interesting term.
The reason I ask, by the way, is as someone who has not struggled with addiction, mm-hmm. I think that we may sort of compartmentalize it too cleanly. Mm-hmm. Like, well, you're going to turn the corner and then that's it. You know, as Sean mentioned, right. You know, 4 years ago starting recovery, you maybe thought you would never relapse again because you turned the corner. And for me, I think that may be a little too simplistic.
Got it, yeah. And I think that's, you know, as much as I want to say that I'm never going to have another flare-up or never going to have a recurrence of my addiction, you know, I don't know. It's a chronic health condition. So I know for the past, you know, 4.5 years, I have not used a substance, but I can only hope that as long as I continue to do what I've done thus far in my recovery, that I'll have another 4.5 years. But, you know, I do have thoughts and cravings about drinking or using drugs, and I don't act on them. I know I have the tools to not act on them. And I think that's part of a chronic health condition, is it's not going to go away. It's never going to go away, but I have the treatment and the tools I need to take care of it.
Let me read some feedback from listeners. Kate says on Twitter, I've been sober since January 5th, 1997. You never forget the date. I couldn't imagine not being sober for major events in my life. The death of my parents, a cancer diagnosis, and cancer survivorship now. Thank you for this show. Diane says, for everyone who is an alcoholic, an addict, there's a minimum of 4 people who are affected by the addict's behavior, and Al-Anon family groups are for them. Rock Al-Anon is alive and vibrant. Wanted to just mention that. Is that important as well, just support groups as well for not just people in recovery, but for people around them?
Absolutely.
You guys want to weigh in on any of that? Where would you point people to? Not just people in recovery, but also the support.
Absolutely. There's actually quite a bit of support for family members from family support navigators at a Liberty Resources. They're over at Open Access to a mutual aid group for families, Al-Anon, Nar-Anon. There's a multitude of support groups. Actually, the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence, Rochester area, their website has a list of resources for all those.
Stephanie writes to us and says, recently lost my sister-in-law to this awful epidemic. It touches everyone and is so terrifying. Angela says, crying at Brandon's story earlier, but so necessary. So thank you for being willing to share your stories of recovery that, as we said, you know, it's an ongoing process. Recovery, sometimes we talk about it like it's an end point. Mm-hmm. That, well, that's it. You've done it. You've recovered, or you're not addicted anymore. And I think we're really learning about some of the challenge, but also some of the hope there is. So in our remaining minutes this hour, I want to remind our listeners again, as we go into next hour, we're going to welcome the Monroe County Sheriff, the Health Commissioner, the Director of DePaul here in Rochester, and we're going to talk about what sort of where they're seeing the crisis and how they're dealing with it, whether it's preventing the flow of drugs, helping in a medical setting. There's a lot more to talk about next hour, and we'll take more of your feedback as we go throughout the next hour as well. I wanted to ask our guests, before we lose this hour with them, in the recovery community, how do you see, let's talk opioids specifically, how you see this crisis and what you see either being done or not done that you think can help? And I'll start with Brandon on this.
I feel like despite everything that organizations like this do, it's still getting worse, because I have a lot of friends that all of my friends I've met are in the program, and people are still dying every single day. I have countless acquaintances and friends that are now dead because of the disease of addiction, and I do what I can, but I don't know where to start.
Do you feel in some sense, you know, you're doing a small part, but does it feel a little overwhelming at times?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Helpless sometimes. Because when there's people that you care about, you see in the same spot I was previously, and I don't know how to help them. If they don't want to get clean, that's nothing I can do.
Yana?
I think that Monroe County, New York State as a whole, and specifically Monroe County, is really so advanced in the supports and services that we have, from open access to support navigators to just a multitude of agencies working together, recovery community organizations working together, that I think, you know, we really are paving the way. I mean, the whole country needs more, for sure. You know, it's a national epidemic. I think that it's probably going to get worse before it gets better. But I also believe and know that there are services and supports out there. There are resources out there. There are people just like us out there that will walk side by side and hand in hand with someone that's trying to get help.
Okay. Sean?
Like Yana said, there's a multitude of resources, but we need to throw everything we have up against this thing. I think the key, education, prevention, and recovery services, and just do everything that we can and continue to do what we do at Rockovery.
Something that Brandon posted on Facebook the other day, I think, is indicative of the way a mindset changes when you go from sort of the throes of addiction to recovery. You don't know what I'm going to choose here, do you?
No idea.
See, this is what happens when we're Facebook friends, man, see? So here's what you wrote the other day. You said, or not too long ago, you said, me in active addiction, driving with my gas tank on E, nah, we'll make it. Me in sobriety, gas tank is 3/4 full. Dude, we got to stop for gas.
Yeah. That's about right. Well, that's exactly how it is.
I thought that was profound because it says to me, you are an active participant in making sure that you're covered, that things are going to work out, that even if you got to get way ahead of something, you deal with a problem. You don't just coast and throw your hands up and what will be will be. Is that how you kind of felt about it?
It was a little bit more literal for me. I was literally on 3/4 of a gas tank, and I was like, well, I probably need to stop. Once the needle starts to come off F, I want to get more.
I like how you noticed, though, that this is the new you in sobriety, though.
Yeah. It's also a complete mindset change. I do not think the same way anymore.
What are the other ways in your life that you think differently now in sobriety versus when you're addicted?
I have a positive attitude today, and it's something I've never really ever had, and that comes from the people I'm surrounded by that are also have positive attitudes, and it changes who I surround myself with, because attitudes are contagious, and I think I've only recently actually realized that. So I have to surround myself with positive people, because negativity rubs off too.
Well, and maybe this is an important point to squeeze in an email from a listener named Eric, who was just asking, can you help someone who isn't ready to be helped? You kind of touched on that briefly with some of the friends or the people around you that you see who are in the position now that you were in before. But what you said on this program is you don't often know what to do. You don't know how to help them if they're not ready. Can you help someone if they're not really ready for it?
Honestly, I'd have to say, probably not. They have to want it for themselves. They have to hit that low point where you've had enough. And I know I had to. I didn't get the message until I had to go through what I went through, was sitting in a jail cell with nobody to call and going through the worst pain of my life. Like, I had to go through that, I really believe.
Yana, can you help someone who isn't really ready for it?
I think it's more of not having regrets. So letting them know that you're there for them, you love them. Whether it's from a distance, whether it's just being available to the person and getting help for yourself as the person that's trying to help. I don't know, you can't change somebody else's mindset, mm-hmm. But you can just be there in whatever that looks like, whatever that means for the individual, just to be present in their support if they need it.
Mm-hmm. Sean?
I think we're there to plant the seed. Whether they're ready or not. And also, if you're living in recovery, just lead by example. You know, if they see you living a right life, a fun life, a life that's worth living, they may jump to the other side of the fence, you know, and ask you, hey, how did you get this way? And just wrap your arms around them when they do decide to jump that fence.
No, that word's actually, I think, probably really important, is fun. It's not just healthy. I mean, you're enjoying life. Yeah. And what you're modeling, at least, certainly looks like at Rockcovery and all the events that you do. And Brandon, it's infectious, just kind of checking out what you're doing now. Mm-hmm. I imagine it takes someone who is seeing that, and it makes them realize it's not just that I can get clean or get into recovery, but I might actually enjoy life. Is it hard when you're in the throes of addiction to envision yourself happy again, Sean?
It is. And, you know, 12 years ago, I wouldn't equate the two words, fun and sober. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. now, you know, when I did get clean, that's what I did. I took it back to when I was a kid. And that's what we do on these walks, on these kayaking trips, on these mountain trips, on these camping trips, everything that we do. You know, we've kind of taken it back to our youth and taken it back to when we were having fun without substances. And just showing that the world that recovery is possible. And it's not just possible, but it's a whole lot of fun, too.
If you want to contact Rockcovery one more time before we go, how do they get in touch with you guys?
You can find us on Facebook. We also have a website, rockcoveryfitness.org, or stop by the center. It's at 1035 Dewey Avenue in Rochester. And our number is 484-585-484-0234.
And all services are free.
Services are free.
Right.
It's very important. By the way, if you're inspired by the recovery stories you're hearing today, we want to tell you how you can hear even more. Artist Simone Okrim lost her 26-year-old son, Brandon, to an overdose in 2016 after he battled addiction for a decade. And now she's exploring how and why people enter long-term recovery in an exhibit called Chasing Nirvana Clean. The people featured in that exhibit want the community to know that recovery is attainable and there's hope. Chasing Nirvana Clean is on view at the Flower City Art Center on Monroe Avenue through the 20th of October, and admission there is free. From the audience, how about a round of applause for these remarkable folks here? Our thanks to Sean, Yana, Brandon. Continued success. Thank you so much for being here. Much more coming up here live on Connections.